Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
This is a very safe space to discuss our feelings, our emotions, and I'm ready for this next conversation, the NFL debate of the day coming up. But first, we are Jhené and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now on ESPN Plus. Jhené Ogwumike, your girl, Mike Golic Jr. holding it down. Now, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Lines. Now, the debate of the day, who is more deserving of the MVP trophy in the NFL? Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers? We will tell you who in about 10 minutes, but right now, the award I care about, because that one is going to be given out in like a few weeks, in a month or so. Right now, we're giving out awards because NBA season is right around the corner. Are you ready for the next one, Junior?
It's time, Jhené. We've been rolling along so much. Cliff, why don't you hit the music? I love corny game show music.
Yes,
I can't get enough
too.
Of it. It just gets you in the right headspace for Jhené Ogwumike's NBA preseason awards. We've gone through, we've done Defensive Player of the Year, new and next upcoming players. But Jhené, we've got to get to Coach of the Year this year. So tell us, who are the nominees?
The nominees for Coach of the Year right now, we have two honorable mentions. I have, starting with Ty Lue taking over the helm for Doc Rivers of the Clippers. Ty Lue is really in a unique position. Back with the Cavs a couple years ago, he stepped in midseason and coached LeBron and company to a championship. Now, this is an interesting twist when it comes to Ty Lue. That was a very highly pressurized system in year he was coaching. Now he is the one that knows LeBron best, with probably the guy that knows how to defend LeBron best in Kawhi Leonard. So I feel like it's going to be an interesting duo there in the same city as LeBron. That's an honorable mention, number one. But number two, we have to go to the guy who actually left the Clippers and now is in Philadelphia, Doc Rivers. I feel like it's going to be really interesting because he left for greener pastures and the stars have really aligned for him in the East. Alongside GM Daryl Morey, there will be a lot of correcting that offensive strategy where Ben Simmons, you're worried about that shortened floor, but now you have a GM in Daryl Morey and you have a great coach, a player's coach in Doc Rivers. And the reason why I love these awards, those were my two honorable mentions. They're all players only. Players only for Coach of the Year. It's a players only edition. But here are the two nominees, okay? Junior, are you ready for this?
Let's strap in for these. What do we got, Jhené?
All right, Coach of the Year can come down to these two. And guess what? They got the same name. They're both Steves. Steve Kerr has already won the award. Steve. He's already won the award in 2000 and a few years ago. But this year is really different because Steve Kerr, he's getting these unique additions. It's not the same team that went, 73-9 on that historic season. He's got Kelly Oubre. He's got James Wiseman. He's got Andrew Wiggins, plus Steph Curry. And then you said Draymond Green's looking good in these streets. Okay.
So I heard.
Came back. Yeah, he's been looking all right. So if Steve Kerr is able to fly under the radar, that's a very dangerous Warriors team that can rack up wins and he can find himself as a Coach of the Year nominee. But honestly, my pick right here is the other Steve, Steve Nash. Steve Nash, this pick is really high risk, high reward, because even though this is going to be his first team first year leading a team in the NBA in this specific role, he probably has the best top to bottom roster in the NBA, especially in the East. The Nets can come at you in waves. You've got KD, you've got Kyrie, you've got Dinwiddie, you've got LeVert, who showed out in their final game in the bubble. So once they find their chemistry, they will be on cruise control and he will find his voice. And once he does, this team, if healthy and if out of drama, Junior, I feel like this team can be led by Steve Nash, and his debut could be really, really good one for the Brooklyn Nets.
Jhené, I think, like you said, it's a great upside bet just because of how good this team can be in year over year. If that were to happen, Steve Nash is going to get a ton of the credit. The Steve Kerr pick, though, very interesting because he's been someone for so long that people looked at and said anyone could coach those teams, anyone could do what he did. And so Steve Kerr in this next act for the Warriors, I think, becomes extremely compelling. But if we're going to talk about New York basketball coaches, then it seems only right that we should bring on our next guest, talking to Alan Hahn from Bart and Hahn on ESPN 98.7 New York. Bart and Hahn going to be coming to ESPN Radio with us here starting January 5th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern. Al, we appreciate the time, man, as Jhené brings up one of the new coaches in New York right now, in Steve Nash. What is the energy around that? I feel like so much of the focus lately has been whatever Kyrie Irving is or isn't saying, but what are the early reviews on Steve Nash here as he's settling into New York?
Before I get to that, could I add a Coach of the Year candidate that isn't a coach?
Please.
Chris Paul. I mean,
great,
if you've seen him already on the sidelines, what Chris Paul's been doing in Phoenix, it's amazing. I heard he had DeAndre Ayton in film session this morning. I mean, it's great to have a guy like that on your team. But all kidding aside, to be honest, There's more buzz nationally about the Nets than there is actually in New York City. I know that's hard to believe, but it's true. It's just what the team is. It's who they are. And you're right. I mean, you're getting the Kyrie Irving stuff because that's the drama. And in New York, do we like a drama on the back pages? That's what we like. So that's what they're looking for. But I got to give Kyrie Irving the credit, though, that he did walk back some of the things he said at the beginning about how, well, we don't need to have a coach. You know, what we want is a partner. We want somebody that's just going to help us, help the other guys coach. But then he realized, wait a minute, this is a guy that's a two-time MVP. I think I can learn something from him. And once they've spent time in the gym, he's starting to see the impact that Steve Nash can have. And the staff also, it's very smart what he did. Because you have Mike D'Antoni there. And Mike D'Antoni, as we know, that offense, everybody loves to play in that offense. Everybody makes money off Mike D'Antoni in that offense. So it's smart that he went to what he knows. And it's also smart that he's a guy that has credentials that he at least should be getting the attention of Kyrie Irving. The Nets are going to be interesting on many levels because there are some people that are thinking this thing is going to completely implode because of Kyrie and his history. And that, you know, there are times Kevin also can have some issues with criticism and whatnot. But there's a ton of talent on that team, there's no question. And the East isn't very good. So they've got a very good chance to be a not just a contender, but can get to the finals. And, of course, if they add Harden, it just gets even more. Now you really got a party, literally. You know, I mean, he's you know, when you go to Magic City to train for your season, I take my hat off to you, sir. But, like, what I think Nash, though, has his work cut out for him, but he also has great opportunity to become not just a championship contending coach, but a guy that can win coach of the year. My question to you guys is this: because of the amount of talent he has, do you give him, and also Mike D'Antoni being on the staff, would you give Nash as much credit as you would, you know, say, you know, Eric Spoelstra and what he does in Miami with what he has?
Well, it's going to be really interesting. We're here with Alan Hahn of Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio right now, Chinay and Golic Jr. It's really interesting because Steve Nash, if he's able to find success in his first year, I feel like a lot of people are going to give credit for managing the personality of those stars mm-hmm. more than anything else. But, you know, we don't have much time, but I wanted to ask you because we talk about the Nets. We kind of have to also talk about the Knicks, though, right?
If we must.
You know, on my preseason awards for Rookie of the Year, I gave Obi Toppin the Rookie of the Year award, just in my estimation, more so just out of love and hope and aspirations for all the Knicks fans out there. But speaking of coaches, Coach Thibodeau, do you think that he can really turn things around for this Knicks franchise?
I think he's going to be their best player this season, right? Like I always say, when a team walks in the gym, who are you preparing for? There's no one on the Knicks roster you're preparing for, but you are preparing for Tibbs because you know he's preparing for you. So I think that's important. They haven't had a coach like that in a very long time. That's critical. The development factor is also critical because they have so many players. They finished last night's game with a U-22 team, basically. Their oldest player, by the way, Shanae, was Obi Toppin on the floor, and he was their rookie. So it just shows you. But yet the fans loved it, and they were very competitive at the end, and he's got to, I think, really go into that development phase. So, yeah, I think his impact, you know, what is his wins over replacement, right? What can he provide to this team as a coach? That's, I think, something that we're all looking forward to seeing because we know it's going to be defense as a foundation, but the development factor, where he's had successes with vets, can he do it with young players? That's something that needs to happen this year because that's all they have right now.
And but they've got, you know what, someone that at least wants to be there, which is saying a lot at this point. And so check out Barton Hahn on ESPN 98.7. Get ready for their arrival here on ESPN Radio, January 5th, noon to 2 Eastern. Alan, we appreciate the time and insight as always, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Alan Hahn with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. By the way, just have to say it. Saw the headshot up there. Cannot ignore it. We had Jason Fitz on earlier. Janae, I'm looking up there. Alan Hahn looks like a tougher Jason Fitz. It's remarkable. By the end of the show, we need to get a cut-up side-by-side of the two of them next to each other. Because I can't get it out of my head now. Devin, our producer, said that into my ear mid-segment, and for the rest of the interview, I was distracted.
I'm just thinking of, like, Jason Fitz sits on one cafeteria table, and he sits on the other end of the cafeteria table.
I could say Alan Hahn is the version of Jason Fitz that comes in the cafeteria and bullies the... Oh, God, Jason. Oh, no.
Very similar vibes. I think it's the hair.
It's 90% the hair.
Apparently Shannon said Alan Hahn is like 6'5", too. So
He
doubles Fitz in size as well.
Yeah. There we go. So there we go. Alan Hahn, in addition to being one of the new members of our lineup here on ESPN Radio, so also a tougher version of Jason Fitz. Doesn't get any tougher than trying to decide the MVP in the NFL.
Mm.
Come on, Cliff, please. I basically begged for it.
Hell no.
Everyone else has been yelling about this all week. Everyone's weighing in on Aaron Rodgers versus Patrick Mahomes in the MVP debate. What's impressed me most is so has Aaron Rodgers. We'll tell you why that's so interesting next. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now. Yes, grab your phone. We're live. You can see our faces, our beautiful faces, juniors especially on ESPN+. Janae Ogumike, Mike Golic Jr. here holding it down. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Lines. Now, in a few minutes, we will ask our own ESPN NFL insider this exact question, but right now I can't wait to get your take, Junior, because we just gave out NBA awards, but more likely that season starts in less than a week. We're in the middle of the thralls of the NFL season, and now it's time, you know, approaching week 15, Thursday night football tonight. We're talking MVP, and it's been really fun this time around because we have, I feel like, two contenders that are neck and neck between Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. Now, this one is really close, and before I get your take, I sort of want to run you the numbers because, you know, from productivity with their offenses, the Chiefs are number one in yards per game. The Packers are two. Chiefs are number one in passing yards per game. Packers are two. Packers are number one in points per game, and Chiefs are number two. Now, it's number two. Sorry, Cliff. I just felt like it came in my head. But what's really cool?
Number two.
Thank you, my family. These guys pretty much oscillate between each other when it comes to productivity on the field. But the one differentiating factor that I've noticed and noted, it's so obvious right here, are their records. And that sort of begs the question, Junior, how much do their records right now matter when it comes to determining MVP? Because the Chiefs are 12-1. Their loss coming to, I would like to say, like the early version of the Raiders, not the as of late version of the Raiders. And then the Packers, they're 10-3, and their losses are to the Bucks. They were blown out. The Vikings, where Dalvin Cook went all crazy on them. And then the Colts, who have a nice, a tough defense. So how much does that win percentage really matter when determining this MVP award?
Yeah, Janae, I don't think it should matter a ton when they're this close, right? When you've got the Green Bay Packers, who, regardless of record, are in first place in the NFC. Like, they're doing the job relative to their situation in this spot. Just the same way the Chiefs are trying to climb into that spot and get that and take hold of it from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I look at this more and say, what are these individuals providing? And it should be that simple, Chiné. Aaron Rodgers is the original Patrick Mahomes. He was the first player that, like, really captivated me coming up as a quarterback with what he was able to do, the out-of-pocket stuff, just a simple flick, the way that he could just hurl it, the Hail Marys, all of it. But he's been upstaged. And Patrick Mahomes now, while a lot of the stats and even the high-level stuff will skew in favor of Aaron Rodgers, who is in his second year in a new offense and is dealing with an offense that, outside of Devontae Adams, does not have a bona fide number one receiver to get it done for him. I get he's got better protection, but Patrick Mahomes, certainly more weapons in that offense, I think just has had more of those Heisman moments that end up mattering a lot. Like, this award is about style points. That's usually what it comes down to. It's not just whose team gets worse when you take them off the field, the way we think of the MVP sometimes, but it's who's doing the most when they've got our eyes, and I feel like that's been Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and I'd like to agree, even though I like, you know, it's funny. I don't know if it's because we're getting up in age and we're probably more relatable to the Aaron Rodgers of the world than the Patrick Mahomes.
Oof, God, that's humbling.
I know, isn't that humbling? It's crazy, but it's been really interesting to follow this, especially this year, because, you know, despite their deficiencies, Aaron Rodgers has still succeeded, and he's been able to put up numbers. I said before, I think it's like sixth best rating ever in the NFL history. I just see this as as one of those neck and neck races where, like you said, it's funny. Earlier on, we were talking about the comparisons between Russ when he was cooking and Kyler Murray, and it's sort of knowing your own history, even if that history is fairly new to a lot of people. But I do like Patrick just because I feel like, even though he has more weapons, and I feel like this is the hardest part when it comes to their case, you have more weapons, you have more success, and it sort of seems like the public still wants to make a case for someone else.
It's so interesting, Chiney, and you're right. That part of it becomes difficult, the public discourse that leaks into all of this. But we hear everyone weigh in on it, and it's always very interesting to me when the athletes decide to weigh in on it. Because Aaron Rodgers, ever since he started going on McAfee's show this year, has been very open and honest. No disrespect. He's been doing that with the Levitard guys for a while, but it's been consistent every week. And so Aaron Rodgers is weighing in on how he defines an MVP. Now, this is from the Packers press conference, but Aaron Rodgers being very forthcoming about all this stuff. Listen.
Well, you know, I think it says most valuable player. A lot of times that player is also the best player, but I think it should kind of live up to what it stands for. It's an acronym, which, you know, Tom has told me it stands for most valuable player. So it's that person who is most valuable to their team, I think. And I feel like that's why I should be in the competition most years, and this year especially.
Like, it's just very interesting to hear a quarterback openly campaigning in this way. And we've heard this from LeBron James in certain instances in the NBA. But, Janae, for an NFL quarterback as established as Aaron Rodgers is to still be out here campaigning for himself in this instance, to me is interesting. And I think it speaks to kind of the way he's almost settled down at this stage in his career. He does seem more comfortable.
And that ageism factor actually really applies, because when we were talking about LeBron James, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of people felt like, oh, he needs it because we don't know how much season he has left, right? Like how many years he has. And other people like Giannis can win the award perennially, like for a long time. It sort of works on the opposite end of the spectrum, because I'm like, oh, Patrick Mahomes is going to be great forever. He's going to have plenty of MVPs. It's like, well, is he deserving right now? And I feel like it's keep that same energy, but it's working in two different ways here.
Absolutely. You're right. It is affecting both of those, because you would like to just say award it to the most valuable player and keep it moving regardless of where they are in their body clock. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Coming up next, we will ask Field Yates that question about the MVP, and should Jameis be getting a look this weekend as the Saints take on Patrick Mahomes and those Kansas City Chiefs? We'll do that after this word from AT&T.
You know what it is. There are a lot of reasons to like AT&T 5G. For example, maybe you're Alvin Kamara blazing through coverages. Then you'll like AT&T 5G because you're fast. Maybe you're Drew Brees on the sidelines recovering. Then you'll like AT&T 5G because you're secure. You're safe. Good choice. Or maybe you're on the other side and your name is Patrick Mahomes. Then you'll like AT&T 5G because you're reliable. Switch to AT&T 5G. It's fast, secure, and reliable. And now it's also nationwide. AT&T 5G, it is not complicated. Like, it's super simple. I have it here at home. 5G requires a compatible plan. 5G may not be in your area. See AT&T.com/5G for you for 5G coverage details. Saints going up against the league's best. Which QB should get the real burn in that matchup? We will answer that next on Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now on ESPN Plus.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Now, in a few minutes, we will get you the word from a commissioner who is big mad. Really unhappy with the college football playoffs. Not like Mike Golic Jr., but right now let's stay in the pros. Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now on ESPN Plus. Chiney Ogunbowale, Mike Golic Jr. holding it down. Now, we just discussed this, but I'm so excited because right now we get the opportunity to bring in reinforcements, especially on a snow day. Wait, what snow? I don't know what that is. So right now, we're really hyped to be joined on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline by Field Yates, our own ESPN NFL insider, and also make sure you check him out on the Fantasy Focus podcast. Field, how are you doing? How's your snow day? How are you managing it all?
Well, you know, Chiney, I was doing great about until about 15 seconds ago. And then when you asked what snow was, you know, probably the most popular GIF on Twitter of the dude blinking his eyes in confusion, that was me for a second. Because, yes, there is 18 inches of snow on the ground here in Bristol, Connecticut. And I would like you to know that it's a pain in the butt to have to plow your driveway or snow or shovel your driveway. It's not fun in any way, shape, or form.
You know that what? Is very true.
Thank you for coming to my defense here, Field, because it is constantly Chiney throwing weather-related shade at us all the way from Los Angeles. And as someone who was also out there busting their back today to try and get that 2 feet of snow off my driveway so I could come in here and hang out with Chiney, I feel like she doesn't take our feelings into account sometimes, Field.
I'm really sorry. I would like to apologize. Let's start this thing over if that's okay, Field, because, you know, in the break, everyone's like, we love Field. Field is one of the nicest people, and I'm just glad to see you get turnt on the snow. But let's talk about the NFL. Because the NFL MVP race has really narrowed down to two at this point. We've got Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. Who do you think has the better case for MVP?
Yeah, so it's funny because this is such a narrative-driven award, right? And part of the reason why that's important to mention is that it can change week to week. And Patrick Mahomes coming off of a game in which he throws three interceptions. I think it's the second time it's ever happened in his career. So it feels like Aaron Rodgers is going to jump ahead of Patrick Mahomes just based off of what happened last week in a game that the Chiefs still won. Aaron Rodgers is going to become the first player ever with three separate seasons of at least 40 passing touchdowns. He's just one more to reach that mark. But if the Packers go 13-3 and the Chiefs go 15-1, like, it still feels to me like 15-1 is so fleeting and improbable in the NFL that Patrick Mahomes probably has a pretty compelling case as the NFL's MVP. That being said, as I mentioned, I used the word narrative. A guy who's in his late 30s, coming off of an offseason in which his team drafted his eventual replacement, I think if the Packers go 13-3, Aaron Rodgers winds up winning the award.
Ooh, Field Yates with us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Aaron Rodgers has made no bones about it. He's been very public talking about his MVP candidacy here, which is in some ways refreshing to hear a player talking about that. A lot less conversation field coming out of New Orleans, the team that's going to face Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs this weekend with those ribs from Drew Brees. How much are you expecting to potentially see Jameis Winston this weekend after the way that we saw struggles at that quarterback position for the Saints last week?
Yeah, it's funny. It feels like all of us who aren't with the Saints have been trying to make Jameis Winston happen for, like, months now, right? Even when Drew Brees was playing, like, there were games where he struggled, and you're like, okay, can we get some Jameis action? I think the case, if somebody wants to see Jameis Winston this weekend, is that you don't beat the Chiefs by scoring, like, 21 points, right? You beat them by scoring 31 or 41 points, and it seems like the Taysom Hill offense is not designed to score 31 or 41 points. That being said, I have a hard time imagining the Saints altering their plans right now. If it's not Taysom Hill, it's because Drew Brees has done what he does frequently, which is defy the odds and find a way back from 11 broken ribs. I still think, though, when Sunday games kicks off, it's going to be Taysom Hill, Patrick Mahomes. And if the Saints have any chance at home, by the way, it's going to be because their defense plays like the defense it was for nine games after a 1-2 start, which they won all nine of those games.
Field Yates with us here, our ESPN NFL insider on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Mike Gold Jr., Chinne Agumake. Now, Field, you're right. Everyone on the collective internet in the NFL loves trying to get Jameis Winston into the game somehow. The Taysom Hill experiment is one that's confusing for a lot of people. But we also love a good revenge game. And so how much is it going to affect the Giants now? We've heard the COVID positives there for Jason Garrett. So Freddie Kitchens' revenge game against the Cleveland Browns, but it sounds like the Giants are going to be shorthanded in a number of ways going into this one.
Yeah, it does feel that way. And I just got to tell you guys this. So the NFL this year has like all these locker room restrictions, right? Only certain people can be there. There's only so much that you can basically bring to light because of how few people are allowed in the locker room. But if there's any way for the Giants to develop an ISO cam for Freddie Kitchens that starts today and goes all the way through the game on Sunday night, please find a way to make that happen. Because the idea of Freddie Kitchens, the Browns head coach ousted after 1 year in what some believe was one of the least inspiring head coaching tenures ever, and the Browns have had a lot of them, and to think that Freddie Kitchens could stand out or, I guess, be on the bottom side of those, like, it's pretty – it's juicy to think that he's now going to be calling plays against his former team on Sunday. Obviously, we wish the best to Jason Garrett in getting healthy and well soon. It's a fascinating curveball to this matchup that, like, sort of low-key became fun over the past month, right? I mean, the Giants have played better defensive late. The Browns, as we know, have had just a remarkable turnaround this season. So revenge game narrative is in full effect on Sunday, and that's not just because Colt McCoy is likely to start against a team that he previously started 21 games for back in 2010 to 2013.
God, I can say the amount of revenge on one field knows no bounds in this spot. We'll see if Baker Mayfield is going to give him the Hugh Jackson treatment as well at midfield at any point in this game. Field, we appreciate the time and the insight as always, brother. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, guys. I'm going to go shovel 18 more inches of snow today. I appreciate you very much. And please find a way to send some L.A. weather our way sometime soon.
I will try my best, Field.
Honestly, we deserve a little bit of a reprieve here. We deserve something.
If I was
nice
there, it would help. But I'm not. Sorry.
That is true, Chenea. Well, the more I think about it, while you were here, mild winters in Connecticut versus what we just
what?
Got now.
Okay, no. Today is the day, and keep that same energy. I will tell you my snow story. Mild winters? No, I saw all of the honestly, yeah, I'll save it.
All right, you know what? I'm going to be very interested to see how this stacks up. For the Houston native who is living in Los Angeles, who did some time in Connecticut, Chenea Gwumike's winter story thrown at the Connecticut lifer, Mike Golic Jr. Going to be very interesting to see. Again, went to college in Palo Alto, went to college in South Bend.
You
Cliff.
Chose Notre Dame. Talk about.
You said did some time in Connecticut, like the state of Connecticut's jail.
That's how most people tend to treat it when they come out here for work.
Only when it's snowing, okay?
Only when it's snowing.
I love Connecticut. Great basketball state.
Only when it's snowing. Pick a day from October until May, and you've got a shot. Welcome to Connecticut. I'm not doing a number for the Board of Tourism right now. Coming up next, though, we heard Aaron Rodgers talking about his own MVP candidacy. We'll hear one conference commissioner in the world of college football talking about the viability of the playoff format. We'll do that next. It's Chenea Gwumike Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Chenea Gwumike Jr., the podcast.
At the top of the hour, we will break down the new Bill of Rights, sports edition, calm down. But before we get to that, there was a commissioner that was making some noise. I panicked a lot of people, right? Chenea Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live on ESPN Plus. Chenea Gwumike, Mike Golic Jr. Now, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Lines. Now, AAC Commissioner Michael Oresco, a conference that, hey, we were just talking about snow in Connecticut. We probably didn't do the best with tourism, but hey, let's give them some representation here. We were just speaking of Connecticut. You know, this is a part of the AAC conference that includes Central Florida, Houston, also Cincinnati. So there you insert the college football playoff problems. And by the way, speaking of Cincinnati, they're undefeated and they've been 8-0. But the last few weeks in the rankings, they've dropped from 7 to number 9. As you know, Michael Jr., since you're a college football analyst, in the college football playoff rankings, despite, I believe, being inactive for 2 weeks now. And for this reason, their commissioner, the AAC commissioner, was coming in hot.
Your team got you down.
It's very sad and very frustrating.
We got you.
Because now is your time.
It is an absolute abomination.
Coming in hot with Chenea and Golic Jr.
Coming in Hot is presented to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Now, it's been really interesting following this because we had this conversation all week long. We've got the Power Five and we've got the Group of Five and everyone's in their feelings, except if you're Notre Dame probably right now. Now, AAC Commissioner Oresco joined Paul Feinbaum on his show. You can hear that all over ESPN Radio and watch that as well. And Commissioner Oresco basically said college football playoff and the eye test, well, you pretty much can catch this heat.
I never thought I'd say it, but if this continues, I'd say let's bring back the BCS and the computers because it would be a fairer system than what I'm seeing now. I mean, this is the seventh year, and it does appear that the deck is stacked against us and against other G4. I think the committee is, you know, honestly undermining its credibility with the rankings that to me defy logic and common sense and fairness. I'm not the only one. I mean, I think there's been universal criticism. I mean, I saw tweets by Tim Brando, Greg McElroy, Jay Billis, Stuart Mandel, Pat Forty, Danny Cannell, Nicole Auerbach, and others. It was pretty much universal.
Everybody, I can't believe we didn't get the shout-out on that one, being big mad online in favor of teams like Cincinnati, who's really the poster child, obviously, for Mike Oresco's frustration in this spot, Chenea. And he says bring back the BCS because I'm pretty sure right now the BCS computers, I believe I saw the numbers run the other day, would have Cincinnati undefeated at number 5. Those computers prioritize that undefeated record in a lot of this. And Chenea, it's interesting to me. We just had this conversation kind of in a different way about the MVP race, right? How the numbers govern this versus what we see and what we know looking at Patrick Mahomes versus Aaron Rodgers in these situations. But for this, the committee's doing exactly what they were asked to do. Be discerning and look past just what the numbers told us because people were upset and people disliked that. And so I don't want to say it's you get what you asked for in this situation, but I think looking in here, Mike Oresco has got to go out here and fight for his conference, but at the same time, I look at this and say the Group of Five is always going to have to do more. And in this shortened season, where we didn't have out-of-conference play, I don't know why we thought this would be the one best opportunity, because you lost that opportunity to go and cross-contaminate with other conferences.
So Commissioner Oresko of the AAC pretty much is telling the truth, but does he have a right to be mad, or is this just basically you should understand that this is the pandemic season in which eye tests is weighted more heavily?
No, he should do this. This is his job, to go out here and advocate on behalf of the conference. I'm just saying, in this situation, the eye test, I think it's a double-edged sword here. I thought Cincinnati was going to get a lot more credit. I thought Luke Fickell being the head coach there, someone that comes from that Big Ten background that's got Ohio State draped all over him and has built the team in that likeness, has built a bully on defense, would have some of those advantages. But when you look at it and have to account for competition, which is the thing the Group of Five is always going to struggle with, it is not the same level of competition across the board. I would like to see Cincinnati rewarded for going undefeated, but I understand if your committee sitting there arguing, looking in that room and saying, we're asked to pick the better team each and every week, and based on what we know about the level of competition they're facing, we can't do this. There's part of me that, especially where it's siloed off conference by conference this year, is going to extend a little bit of leeway towards the committee, even if it's ultimately a decision I disagree with.
So if this was any other year, a year where everything was a little bit more fair and there was that right type of parity, do you think that Cincy's case would be better? Because I feel like in this year, he's sort of advocating for the other side of that.
Well, Chiné, I would say this. I think in every other year, I kind of naively thought, well, you know what? Cincinnati would have been able to have out-of-conference matchups against Power 5 schools the way that Houston in the very first round of the college football playoff kind of stepped onto the scene for a lot of people. And but now we get the other difficult part of this. Teams aren't going to want to schedule Cincinnati going forward the same way teams didn't want to schedule UCF in a lot of instances here. And that becomes the difficult part. You get too good for your lot in life, and you want to show that off. You want to show this committee, hey, like, we're built to play like everybody else. When you look at Cincinnati's makeup, I believe that they're capable of that. But the resume portion of saying playing in a Power 5 conference over the course of a long season, the level of competition is just a tick higher in all of that. And that acknowledgement isn't a bad thing. But I think it would be naive for me to think that anything about the way that the playoff committee has operated so far gives Group of Five teams a real chance. That's got to be incredibly frustrating.
Look, I grew up in Houston, Texas, where once you walk, you saw little boys and little girls even in pads playing peewee football and everything. It was great to see. And then knowing how big the game was, especially when I got to high school, it was literally treated collegiately. So being a part of Stanford and you being a part of Notre Dame, those storied programs, you know, we have a very soft spot, you know, in our just DNA for college football. But I'm saying this, and I'm asking you this, Junior, out of like the goodness of my heart, will we ever be satisfied? You know what I mean? Like, we have this thing, the college football playoff, that everyone sort of looks to as, yeah, this is our tournament. This is our March Madness type of moment. And now it's like, we need expansion. Do you think that we will ever be satisfied? But obviously having commissioners advocate for those on the outside is great. But I'm just looking, I'm like, will there ever be peace?
No, Janae, there will never be peace. You know, have you ever seen the gif of that guy trying to carry a bucket with a mop and a hose and all that stuff, and he falls down and it falls everywhere? That's like trying to appease all of college football, all of college athletics. It's too big. It's too hard to hold and maintain in all of this, and it's too unevenly distributed. That's why it's like carrying a bunch of different objects, because you're never going to have the uniformity that pro sports have in their scheduling. You're never going to be able, because of the violence of the sport, to have a tournament as far-reaching as the one that happens in college basketball. And so I just don't think you're ever going to be able to satisfy everyone involved, which is why that eventual Power 5 departure is something that honestly would probably benefit everybody. There was a golden opportunity for the committee this year to look and say, you know what, Cincinnati's undefeated. They look like a team that passes our eye test.
Great.
Let's rank them above these two-loss teams and go to work with it. But they didn't believe that enough in their hearts, and that's why we brought this human committee together, to say, you guys in your depth of knowledge decide this, and now we don't like their decision, which is the least shocking thing in the world. So,
and I'm looking forward to, you know, discussing this in a grander way when we get to the Bill of Rights at the top of the hour, because that's really going to affect, you know, the powers that be, but it's actually coming through the players, not just the commissioners these times around.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, Chiné, and we'll do that coming up next, because this is the divide we talk about between the haves and the have-nots in the world of college football. But what happens when it's college football versus the world? That's what we've got going on with the College Athlete Bill of Rights. That's what we'll get to next here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.